Afternoon, everybody. I'm going to call the Finance Committee to order. Today is Monday, February the 10th. It is now 1:32. Member present today, Representative Munoz, Representative Holmes, Representative Guerra, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Costello, Representative Osterman, Representative Wilson, Representative Edgman, Representative Thompson, Representative Newman. Today we have one item on our budget or on our agenda today, and that is to hear from the Governor's Office of Management Budget about the Governor's 10-year budget plan. So if the Director of OMB would like to join us and bring her reel back up to the table, introduce yourselves, and we'll go ahead and get started. We'll do the same as we've done in the past, no questions, so you get through your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Karen Rehfeld with the Office of Management and Budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Boucher, Senior Economist with the Office of Management and Budget.
Mr. Chairman, today Mr. Boucher and I are going to do this presentation jointly. As some of you may know, John has been the lead on our 10-year plan since its inception, and so I think with the two of us here, hopefully we can get provide you with an overview of the 10-year plan and then answer your questions as well. As you know, the 10-year plan is a tool. It's a tool for us to use in developing our annual budget that we put in context of the longer view. We looked, when we talked a little while ago about our budget for this fiscal year 2015, we talked about several tools in our toolbox: our income stream, our savings, our cash on hand, our debt capacity. When income is down, you focus on priorities and prudently manage your cash and your savings to cover what needs to get done. We recognize that conditions and circumstances change, and we adjust accordingly. So our goal today is to give you some background on the plan, how we use this tool in the budget process, and to emphasize that it is a tool.
I'd like to start with just giving you a brief history and an overview of the 10-year plan. The legislation that amended the Executive Budget Act to require a 10-year projection of revenue and expenditures was introduced in the 2007 session, and it was enacted in 2008. The first executive summary of the 10-year plan was published in December of that year, and simultaneous with the release of the governor's budget. And the first agency plans were produced in January of 2009. They were delivered to the legislature for the first time. For the first 3 years of doing the 10-year plan, agency 10-year plans were done by sending customized Excel spreadsheets out to the agencies in templates, and then OMB's job was to get that input back and integrate them into one coherent document. The process that we were using was time-consuming, really inefficient, and it was error-prone as well. In late 2010, OMB started the process of integrating a module into the Alaska budget system that replaced the Excel spreadsheet method of creating the 10-year plans. That project took a little under a year, but we did achieve our primary goal of automating significant portions of the process, particularly for the agencies. The first plans that were generated through the Alaska budget system were the agency plans that were delivered to the legislature in January of 2012. To be frank, there's still work left to be done to be more efficient and effective in how we do this plan, but we've come a long way since the initial plans were done. This year's plan, the fiscal year 2015 plan, represents the sixth year that OMB has produced a planning document under the enabling legislation, and we intend to strive to continually improve the 10-year plan process as well as the product to help it meet the objectives of being an informative and useful planning tool.
So we talk about the purpose of the plan, and the main purpose of the plan is to create the annual dialogue about the future fiscal health of Alaska. I know this committee and many Alaskans have been having a fairly robust conversation about our future and what we can do to grow our revenue base. Looking ahead at the next 10 years, Alaska must increase oil production while also transitioning from a predominantly oil revenue base to an oil and natural gas revenue base, as well as developing other industries, fishing, timber, mining, and tourism. Commercialization of North Slope gas will provide economic opportunity and a stable, clean source of energy to fuel Alaska businesses and homes for years to come. The plan also provides context for budget decisions within the overall revenue picture. The 10-year plan is produced annually, and it's based on the Alaska Department of Revenue's fall forecast. With the current revenue projections backstopped by our budget reserves, Alaska must exercise spending discipline to sustain itself through 2024. During this time, we expect to slow and improve the decline curve of oil production while also transitioning to a future where natural gas is beginning to take a larger role in the state's overall economy. Assuming the fall 2013 forecast and a conservative spending assumption scenario, the combined balances of the state's primary reserve accounts, the statutory budget reserve and the constitutional budget reserve, would remain positive during the next 10 years. The level of state spending, however, is a critical variable in the year-to-year general fund expenditures versus revenue equation. The plan also is designed to inform, given a range of scenarios. The 10-year forecast shows that anticipated budget shortfalls during the 10-year period could be filled through the use of reserve funds. However, other fiscal tools, including spending reductions, will be used to manage over that 10-year period.
I want to cover some of the plan requirements. The overarching objective of the 10-year plan are really guided by the statutory language that requires the executive branch to produce a 10-year plan. AS 3707-020B2 says that the annual plan must balance the budget between sources and uses of funds, provide for essential state services, protect Alaska's economic stability, and it also must include balanced projections for significant reserve funds and discuss the major assumptions on which the plan is founded. With this guidance in mind, the foundation of the 10-year plan is the Department of Revenue's 10-year revenue forecast. The fall revenue forecast serves one of the primary assumptions for the plan in terms of future available revenue. Other general assumptions are included in the plan are inflation is assumed to be 2.5%, which is based on the same inflation rate that the permanent fund expects over the next 10 years, and population growth will be slightly above 1% annually, which represents the base case of the most recently available Department of Labor and Workforce Development population estimates. There are two significant release dates in the annual 10-year plan production cycle. The statewide executive summary is released in December with the release of the governor's budget proposal. And in January, shortly after the legislature that convenes, the individual agency plans are released. The statewide executive summary and the agency plans provide different levels of detail and information. The executive summary is intended to provide a global view of state spending and revenue, while the individual agency plans are intended to provide a more detailed look at agency projections for the 10-year period. It's important to note that the guidance that OMB gives to the agencies when they develop their plans. Agencies are granted latitude to develop their spending projections. For example, agencies are not required to meet a spending target. However, in developing their plans, OMB gives the following guidance, and this is from the instruction memo, so pardon me if I read. The process of making 10-year projections is not an opportunity to ask for every program or every thing that every program has ever wanted. Rather, the projection should be the result of a rational, objective process within the department that will withstand the scrutiny of the governor, the legislature, and the public. Each of the agency plans provide two different projections. One is called the current level of service, and that is defined as what will it cost to provide the fiscal year, in this case, this year's 2014, level of service through fiscal year 2024. The one exception to that rule that OMB requires is that if you anticipate that a non-general fund source decrease will happen, you should not assume the general fund would replace that fund source automatically, and that would be considered an initiative. So, for example, if you anticipate that federal funding is going to drop in your program, we don't automatically assume that you will backfill with GF. That would have to, that type of projection would be covered in the initiatives section. So, and as I said, we also provide an initiatives projection. And that is designed to highlight projected costs associated with expanding or contracting the service capacity of the agency from its fiscal year 2014 level, or, as I said, if new GF would be required to replace non-GF fund sources. Agencies must produce an expenditure projection for operating spending, capital spending, and for those agencies that have formula programs, they must also provide a projection for each formula program within the agency. As you have seen in your review of the plan, not every budget item is projected at the agency level. Some items appear in a separate projection called statewide appropriations. Examples of these items include personal services increases associated with projected wage and benefit increases, the state assistance payments to the employee retirement systems are another example, annual debt service payments, and fund capitalizations. These are just four of some of the projections that appear in that statewide appropriations projection. For many of the statewide projections, OMB serves in a coordinating capacity to produce the projection, or in some cases, OMB is responsible for producing the projection.
So there are several guiding principles that we use that are foundational to the 10-year plan. The 10-year plan meets its statutory objectives through the application of these principles. So these include, and we've used these consistently since the beginning with the 10-year plan, development of Alaska's natural resources, restraining spending, and saving for future generations.
As we all know, Alaska's future hinges on the responsible development of its abundant natural resources. Currently, nearly 90% of the state's unrestricted general fund revenue is generated from petroleum production activity. For the foreseeable future, the health of Alaska's fiscal system will be closely linked to the wealth generated from the monetization of Alaska's natural resource base. The administration's highest economic priority is the development of the state's natural resources, and the state's long-term plan is based in part on efforts to stem Alaska's oil production decline. The administration's strategy to increase oil production includes making Alaska more competitive, ensuring the permitting process is structured and efficient, facilitating and incentivizing the next phase of North Slope development, and promoting Alaska's resources and providing a positive investment climate in comparison to the world market. Increasing oil production in the near term is Alaska's short to mid-term fiscal lifeline, but the realization of Alaska's vast natural gas potential is an important piece to the state's longer-term fiscal health. The administration is working to maximize the benefit of Alaska's gas for Alaskans and growing Alaska's economy. Alaska has an important role to play as well in securing a domestic supply of strategic minerals. These minerals are used in radar systems, avionics, satellites, renewable energy systems, and consumer electronics. Alaska is considered highly prospective for strategic and critical minerals, and we're taking action to try to take advantage of that. The state also has an ambitious energy goal of having 50% of all of Alaska's electricity generated by renewable resources by 2025. In order to meet that goal, the administration advocates state investment in a large-scale hydroelectric power project, as well as investment in smaller regional projects that use wind, hydroelectric, and other renewable resources as the energy source for power generation. In many areas, as you know, high-cost diesel is currently the primary fuel for electrical power generation, and the administration also proposes to use continued investment in energy conservation programs as well. While not listed on this particular slide, developing and managing Alaska's other natural resources also play a significant part in Alaska's future. Mining, timber, fisheries, and tourism all are reliant on Alaska's natural resource base for continued health, and these industries all play critical roles in the diversification of Alaska's economy and its employment base.
Another guiding principle of the 10-year plan is to restrain spending. In contrast to revenue, the part of the fiscal equation that Alaska's policymakers can have the greatest impact on is the size of the state's budget. Restraining spending growth enables the state to position itself better for years when oil revenue is down and prudently use savings to cushion the state's economy from the swings in state revenue. In order to restrain spending, the administration implements multiple strategies, including setting spending targets. With the higher oil prices over the past few years, the spending trajectory was on an unsustainable path. The governor and the legislature have worked closely together over the last couple of years to set spending targets and then focus on the priorities to fund within those targets. And over the past 2 years, we've seen significant efforts to reduce spending. We also utilize results or performance-based budgeting. That helps us focus on those agency missions and core services and evaluate the results as a key component of our annual budget review and justification of those increased requests for spending. The administration requires greater coordination among agencies and works to eliminate waste and duplication. Greater efficiency in service delivery will help to deliver essential services at less cost. And we're also encouraging agencies to explore new and innovative ways to deliver services. And also, we're looking at long-term investments as those strategic investments that are necessary to grow our economy. These can include things like our legacy projects of the gas line, roads to resources, our transportation infrastructure, and energy. All of these strategic investments are key to our long-term economic health.
The savings portion of the plan is the cornerstone, really, to protecting Alaska's economic stability. Setting aside savings now meets a basic challenge facing Alaska, and that's turning the non-recurring revenue stream produced from Alaska's natural resources into a long-term recurring revenue source that can help protect Alaska's economic stability well beyond the life of the resource. As you know, Alaska's permanent fund receives ongoing deposits of mineral royalty revenue as well as annual appropriations to inflation-proof the fund. These two elements are foundational pieces for Alaska's savings plan. Looking at the December 2013 monthly report from the Permanent Fund Corporation, you can see just how critical these two actions are to overall savings. The December report shows at the end of fiscal year 2013, of the $44 billion balance in the permanent fund, more than $22 billion of that balance had been appropriated by the legislature, either through special appropriations or inflation proofing. In contrast, the dedicated revenue that comes from the state share of oil contributed $14.5 billion to the fund. That same report shows that if you look forward from this fiscal year 2014 to 2024, inflation proofing and the dedicated revenue are projected to contribute an additional $19.8 billion to the principal of the fund. If these actions occur and the fund meets or exceeds its earnings projection, the balance of the permanent fund could be $78 billion in 2024. In addition to growing the permanent fund, the plan contemplates that when there is surplus general fund revenue available, that a portion of the surplus is set aside in reserve accounts. You can see this in the structure of our annual budget, in that generally, when we have reserves, it will automatically go to a reserve fund. In times of revenue shortfalls, however, the reserves may be used to fund ongoing services. Up until fiscal year 2005, the primary reserve account drawn upon to fund ongoing state government was the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. From its inception through fiscal year 2005, more than $5.2 billion was borrowed from the CBR to help balance the state's budget. Higher oil prices and changes in oil tax policy resulted in general fund revenue surpluses beginning in fiscal year 2007, which allowed the CBR to be replenished so that by the end of fiscal year 2010, the borrowed balance had been repaid by the general fund. The available CBR balance now has grown to more than $12 billion. Additionally, more than $5 billion has been placed in the statutory budget reserve, and its current balance is $4.7 billion. With current reserve projections, the plan anticipates that there will be draws on these reserve funds to balance the state budget in the near term. The extent of the draws in the out years will depend on updates to spending plans as well as to our revenue forecast. Another method that the plan deploys to provide fiscal stability is forward funding or endowing programs. Examples of where the state has built reserves to fund important programs include the Public Education Fund, the Community Revenue Sharing Fund, the Power Cost Equalization Fund, and the Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund. From the spending perspective, the focus has been on funding essential state services. The plan prioritizes spending according to the administration investment priorities of resources and energy, education, public safety, transportation infrastructure, and supporting Alaska's military.
We'll be walking through some of the scenarios in the executive summary that was released with the budget in December. But I think these scenarios really give us a look at some reasons for optimism and also to be cautious. I think we can be optimistic because our financial outlook is positive. We have strong reserves, a AAA rating, and we have fiscal discipline. We need to be cautious, however, because we know that oil price and production levels can quickly change and impact our fiscal outlook. The conservative revenue picture from the December forecast also tempers our ongoing long-term outlook. So we built these three scenarios that Mr. Boucher will go through with you for a moment. We looked at scenarios based on reduced spending and use of reserves. We know that lower price and production have a profound impact on our revenue stream. that it's going to require fiscal discipline and some use of reserves in the near term to provide service. We're going to focus on our priorities and strategic investments to grow the economy. And I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Boucher to walk through at least the three scenarios that we produced with the executive summary.
So while our current fiscal outlook could be characterized as relatively strong, you only need to look at the not-too-distant past to remind Alaskans that the link between the state of Alaska's revenue and the price of oil or changing production can change Alaska's fiscal outlook quickly and dramatically. My boss and I to the left here remember huddling in the office in fiscal year 2009 as the price of oil plummeted. And we have to, and I like to keep that in the back of people's minds because we did survive that situation. So in the first scenario that we'll look at here is the fall forecast with flat general fund spending beginning in fiscal year 2015. But before I get too far into that, I want to kind of do the standard disclaimer that we have with these, and that's that these scenarios are best used as a planning tool. The assumptions that we use for revenue and expenditures are intended to provide context to your budget deliberations, and that revenue shortfalls will need to be managed through a combination of budget reductions and use of reserve funds in the near term. All three principles of the 10-year plan need to move in concert to be effective. And as indicated, the plan will have to change as external conditions warrant. This is somewhat difficult to read, but I want to try to walk through each one particularly. Let me orient you quickly. The top line is the represents the information, the top two lines represent the price and production forecast from the fall revenue forecast. The third line down is the expected general fund revenue based on those two numbers. And then we have the general fund expenses, and then a budget surplus or shortfall is calculated based on those two numbers. And then below is the individual accounts of the CBR, which add up to the total of the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. And the green line below that is the projected statutory budget reserve balance. And these are year-end balances. So this would be in the fiscal year 14 column, for example, it would be at the end of fiscal year 2014. First of all, the model, I want to speak a little bit about the model that these numbers are generated from. It's not a smart model in that it anticipates rational behavior. So, for example, when prices fall and revenue falls, it doesn't automatically adjust spending. Also, too, if you look at the management of the reserve accounts, we probably would behave slightly differently if there were a run on reserves. So what the model does is it first takes your first draw out of the statutory budget reserve, then the CBR main fund, then the sub-account. So that's kind of the order in which the reserves are drained. And so, of course, as you started to liquidate the sub-account, that would tend to be moved to lower earning, the lower earning main account. So this is the fall 2000 forecast with general fund spending capped at $5.6 billion. And should the future play out according to this scenario, there would be budget deficits through 2024 and steady draws from the SBR and the CBR. Under this scenario, the total reserve balance by the end of 2024 would be approximately $7.9 billion. In contrast to that, we did a second scenario, which we call the mid-high case oil production. So this scenario assumes the fall 2013 price forecast and what we refer to as a mid-high case for oil production. The mid-high oil production scenario assumes that oil production falls approximately halfway between the Department of Revenue's fall 2013 fully risked forecast and the unrisked technical assessment that's provided to the department. So another way of thinking about this is if half the barrels came in that the assessment showed. In this scenario, we have a $2 billion deficit in, or a nearly $2 billion deficit in 2014, and the transfer of $3 billion from the CBR to the retirement trusts results in a short-term decline in the total reserves through 2015. However, as increased production and rising prices combine, they close the deficit substantially, and by 2016, the CBR reverses its decline as a result. There are still annual draws anticipated from the SBR and the CBR to balance the budget. However, the relatively small draws result in a climbing CBR balance through 2023 when the annual budget deficits start climbing again. At that point, the CBR balance is approximately $12 billion. And then, now that I've showed you the good scenario, I can show you the lower price scenario. Mm-hmm. Not naturally, not so pretty. This scenario assumes that oil prices fall to $100 for fiscal year 2015 and hold steady at $100 a barrel through 2024. Annual spending growth is held at $5.6 billion. And this scenario is intended to illustrate the potential deficits that could occur in an environment that has oil prices, than lower oil prices than are currently forecast. As I noted earlier, it is probably highly improbable that the state would continue spending at the fiscal year 2015 level under these lower revenue circumstances. However, it is useful to demonstrate the length or the strength of Alaska's reserve position given that occurrence. In this scenario, if we assume $5.6 billion in general fund spending, we have pretty consistent budget deficits at $1.5 billion, steadily growing to almost $3 billion by the end of the period. And under those circumstances, the statutory budget reserve and the CBR combined account balances are eroding steadily, and the steady draws on those two accounts result in the balances being exhausted by 2022.
So, Mr. Chairman, to wrap up, there's a wide range of possible scenarios that could lie ahead for Alaska. And as John said, the model is illustrative of just some scenarios that we included with the budget released in December. For the most part, was designed specifically to show the pressure that's going to be maintained on the operating budget and the capital budget on a number of these scenarios. So in terms of our budget development, the design was to keep as much pressure on that number as we could in our December budget. So while the future holds the promise of relative fiscal stability if Alaska experiences oil prices above $100 a barrel, the past has demonstrated on numerous occasions that the state must take a cautious approach to its finances and carefully consider the obligations that it makes to ensure that we can continue to provide essential services in the future. So the challenge is finding the balance today between the needs of current Alaskans and future Alaskans. And as I mentioned, because of the good work that the governor and the legislature have done, working to develop our resources, restrain spending, and save for the future, we're in a very good position to be optimistic while at the same time exercising restraint and caution about our fiscal situation. So with that, we're happy to try and answer questions the committee might have.
Thank you, Karen and John. Appreciate it. I've got a couple of questions I'll go ahead and get started with. And while this 10-year plan is in statute and the requirements to provide it, we don't know what the hell the price of oil is going to be tomorrow, much less 10 years from now. We can talk about controlling the size of government through our budget process and how much money we spend there. We assume that things are going to change with the production, but that's an assumption. We don't know. And even your models for the out to FY24 and all three of your models show a lower production all the way down. And that doesn't quite jive with the work that was done with Senate Bill 21, which is supposed to increase production. So my question is, does this plan, does this 10-year exercise have value to the state? Sit here and spend the amount of time that you guys do and each department does on a 10-year plan, trying to get to a point where we don't have a clue what we're doing. We don't have a clue really what's the end result's going to be, because we've got all of our money and all of our eggs, so to speak, in the one basket that we have no control over, price. And I just, can you give me some idea of what you think the value of this exercise is? And I'm not following you. It's in statute. Like I said, we're going to do it whether it's got value or not, but I'm just curious.
Mr. Chairman, I'll start, and then John or Mr. Boucher can add on, since he has the person who's worked with this the closest. But from my perspective, it has value. So on a couple of different levels, from you know, the global level, as we're working on developing our budgets and looking at the pressures that are happening in each one of our agencies, we have the a global perspective that we can look at and try to evaluate the level of spending that we're going to put forward, what that potential impact will look like in the future. At a department level, I think it helps a department look towards how are they delivering their mission or their core services, and what are the things that are going to be presenting, what are the challenges that are going to be presented to them in the future. So it causes them to have to think through some of the requests that they're making, either statutorily or budgetarily, that will influence or impact what overall state spending will be. Unfortunately, at the department level, they don't have the benefit of knowing what's happening in their other agencies. So that's where the information is useful to us in our process to really try to identify where the pressures are. When we talk to our departments, last spring, when we actually started thinking about the FY15 budget, we talked about you're going to be needing to make reductions in the 15 budget and the 16 budget and the 17 budget. So start thinking now about that in context of your 10-year plan and what are the kinds of things that you're going to be able to do as an agency. So I think there's a value there. Probably on the downside of it, there's not the precision that I think people would like in the 10-year plans, but it's difficult to get to precision when the circumstances change. So you're really picking a point in time. But I think there's value, Mr. Boucher.
Mr. Chairman, the value that I see is the education and self-examination, that process that we go through this cycle. I'd also like to think that I haven't spent the last 6 years doing something that's useless. However, let me give you a concrete example. 2 years ago in the summer, the legislature left with oil at about $100, $105, and then it precipitously dropped to $90. We did some analysis, and because people were concerned, you know, did we just sign a budget that sends us into deficit next year? And that generated some conversations about this model and how the price can affect general fund revenue and the expectations even in the current year. That conversation in the governor's office soon spread to the commissioner's level, which in the preparation process for the budget cycle that occurred 2 years ago, we then spread that out to the director level. And so they began to understand how the price influences the overall state revenue and the decisions that ultimately are made at the department level. And this is the only tool that I can think of in which we have gone to the agencies and showed them this is what happens when the price changes. And they, you know, remember the good old days when $40 oil was awesome? And, you know, we're in a different world now. And so we're able to show our people how dependent we are on this and then how the prices change. And in addition, another thing that we've taken this model to is the negotiations that we have with employee unions. These are hard conversations to have. But I just want you to know that we're using this information to educate people at the opportunities we have. And without this process, I don't know that we'd have the tools to adequately do that. So from my perspective, that might be the single most valuable thing that we provide in this context, is it gives us all a minute to step back and say, what does the big picture look like? And how is this decision that is in front of me now going to adversely or potentially help the situation in the future?
It makes sense. Sometimes it's a little frustrating from this side to sit there and try to think outside the box when you're pretty much hamstrung on the revenue coming into the state. So I've got one kind of a large question, but on all three of your models, the general fund expenses, you're projecting out 5.6. And $5.6 billion is what we have this year for the budget that the governor brought forward. But at the same token, we're hearing things like Medicaid's going to grow from $700 million to $1.3 billion over time in the same time period. PERS and TERS. With another $500 million next year if we pass the governor's plan. The governor's increase for education this year, his proposals, is, I think, $51 million in round numbers. Over 10 years is $500 million. When I start adding these things up, DEC is going to have an increase of somewhere around $6 to $8 million a year based upon the fact their fund sources run out. We've got potentially on the books the 404 DEC issues that'll, if we accept that, that's going to be somewhere between $7 to $10 million a year to fund. Yet your projections are exactly the same for the next 10 years. And when I start adding these kind of numbers up, I'm getting into the billions of dollars and numbers of increased costs that we have projected out there right now on the table we're having conversations about. So that gets me back to your general fund expenses. Are you planning on taking all of those new increases out of the revenue that or the fund expenses that you're talking about to keep you within this balanced budget that you're on? And that, again, gets me back to what's the value of this 10-year plan if I can look for 1 year and say everything's all skewed up and it doesn't work.
Mr. Chairman, again, I think our executive summary in December was designed to illustrate what would occur under the scenario of about a $5.6 billion general fund target. I think there's been a lot of discussion about that in the public about plans to spend or cap spending, state spending at about that level. It clearly is not designed to answer all of the individual components of what would be included in that number. But I think if we're really looking at the revenue stream that the fall forecast came out with, we're probably going to need to make some very difficult decisions, again, about what's going to be included, what that overall level of spending is going to be, and how it's going to impact our reserves. So we weren't trying to roll up every consideration that's out there right now, because we're not probably going to be able to do everything that people would like us to do, but really to keep the pressure on that overall spending number in our planning process. So that's, I think, the value of it.
And I bring it up only because these are the conversations we're having. These are the projections that are out there for next year, where you have a $5.6 billion budget, and I can look over here and say, whoa, that's not reality-based, and I don't want to go out with this type of projection to the public and say, here's what happened. Here's, if everything goes this way, this is how much money we have in savings, and this is how much money we have left. But at the same token, I've got another handful of bills over here that I see coming due next year that are not reflected in this. So it's just, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's a game we play, I guess, or I shouldn't call it a game, but it's the numbers that we work with every day.
Mr. Chairman, I'll acknowledge that shortcoming with this particular plan. One thing that other projections that I've seen, for example, from the Legislative Finance Division have showed similar numbers that we see in the $100 oil projection. So it is definitely challenging to look out 5 years and what will Medicaid be and how much will be paying for will we be paying for retirement costs, et cetera. So, but that's, I do think it brings value in that these types of discussions are going to have to occur in the context of, well, if we need to keep spending flat to keep reserves, what gives? That's the conversation, I think, that and the difficult task, I think, that we face.
And I've said it before, and I'll continue to say it, we will never be able to cut our way to prosperity, and this state, with a flat budget for the next 10 years, will not grow to the degree that it should grow to establish a tax base that will help carry us in the future. So it's a chicken-and-the-egg type thing, and I understand that, but I think we should have these conversations every time we have these discussions like this. Is what is reality, and we got to let the public know where we're at. I appreciate your answers. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concerns were the same, talking about the $5.6 billion spending flat over the next 10 years. Not only the items that you have mentioned that we're looking to add, but most of the departments, when they come in, we're looking at their 10-year projections, and they're pretty flat line on what they think they're going to spend. But you take into account that the biggest portion of our budget is personnel. And you start looking at the step increases and the contracted cost of living increases, and it blows this completely out of the water. So I think it's unrealistic for us to assume that we can hold that unless, starting this year, probably next year for sure, we start cutting entire programs from our budget. So it kind of doesn't paint a very pretty picture, but you know, just the increases for the personnel cost alone, I mean, that doesn't fit with what you're saying.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thompson, yes, and as you know, I think Mr. Boucher mentioned with that we have been very actively involved in educating our employees and our agencies about the current fiscal outlook and situation, which I think has been very helpful in terms of tempering some of the expectations in departments, and I think you've seen some contracts that have been negotiated that are pretty lean contracts. We know over time that the reality is if we were going to be able to lower the cost in the operating budget, you're probably looking at fewer employees. I think that's just a reality that we're going to be seeing. Whether or not our current merit and step schedules are appropriate will probably be something that people will be looking at over time. But the reality is we're not going to be able to continue to do business the same way and meet some of these spending targets that we're talking about.
Thank you.
Representative Munoz.
Thank you. My question follows the two previous questions. In FY15 on the chart on page 14, you show $5.64 billion general fund expenses. As I understand it, the actuarial payment is not included in that figure, which is about $600 million, which is proposed to come out of the CBR for PERS and TERS payment. It doesn't appear that you've added the $500 million back in subsequent years. If the governor's proposal passes, actually the subsequent years would be an additional $500 million at least. And I'm wondering if you can address that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Munoz, what you see on the chart, I'm having trouble with it too, but you can see on the CBR main account balance, we're showing actually the draw, the $3 billion draw in FY15. So you see if the legislature approved that transfer into the trust funds this year, you'll see that reduction. In the out years, 16 and out, the annual retirement payment would be capped at $500 million. So in a scenario where you had a $5.6 billion spending target on an annual basis, that would have to include that $500 million payment. That would be part of that.
So that's exactly my point, that it's not included in FY15. So that's going to be an additional $500 million in cuts to come out to that flatline budget that's being proposed.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Munoz, that's correct, and that's part of the reason that this discussion to have really what's going to need to happen if our target is going to be 5.6. We still have the conversation to have about what the target is going to be for the current year. Like John said, the model is somewhat limited, but clearly if you change those numbers, you can see the impact either up or down. You can see the impact on your reserves. So this was the kind of for the purposes of illustration, recognizing we have some areas that are going to be extremely difficult.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you have priorities from the agencies that they give you based on this 10-year plan, I'd like to see education and labor because I've never been able to get them to give me a priority list. So if others have had that, then kudos to you. Because to me, there's a difference between priorities and government obligation. And really, we should be looking at what are we obligated to do as a state versus necessarily what we see as our priorities. I guess my biggest concern, though, when I look at this and knowing that a lot of these bills are actually the governor's bills, and so to me that should have been included just because they were his, so I'm assuming he thinks they'll pass. Maybe he knows something I don't. But I guess my bigger concern is really not about the state budget, but how much are we going to put on our municipalities if we can't pay the bills? Because we've been known to, in the past, to take away from them first, whether that's revenue sharing or cost of education coming from the state needs. I guess I would like to know whether or not that's part of this plan whatsoever on when you're talking about priorities. Is it the state's staying flat line is going to be the first priority and looking at the municipalities to take on more and more of this because the interior really can't take much more of this pressure that they have already. And, you know, I think it's their pressure we need to be looking at first.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, to a couple of the, I'll try to answer a couple of the questions. On the discussion about priorities and government obligations, what from the performance framework that we ask our departments to use, they're supposed to be allocating their resources towards those core services that are statutorily driven. So between in the education and labor departments, you should be able to see through their priorities or their core services how much resource is allocated. People and resources are allocated to those different core services. If you know, if there are things that a department is doing that would not be part of the core services, that would obviously be a lower priority, particularly in a lower funding environment, what they're doing. So those are in all of your departments. As your subcommittees work on these budgets, they should be able to talk to you about the people and the resources they have allocated to those statutorily required core services. And that should be the focus of their budget. To your other comments clearly about how much would we be pushing off or cost shifting perhaps to municipal governments, clearly that would be a discussion that we have through the budget process and what changes you might want to make in programs and funding levels. And to the point about the governor's legislation, of course, the time when we rolled out the December budget, we did not have the gas line agreements yet. You will see those fiscal notes for both education and the gas line effort on the amended fiscal summary that will come out on the 30th day.
Follow up, sir. So with the way you put this presentation together, you couldn't have changed those figures and added into what you're showing us today. I understand you couldn't have put it into the budget because you wrote the budget out before that, but revenue always shows us how they can, well, maybe it's Mr. Teal that does that. Maybe I'll give the credit to the right person, where he can just put in the figures it should be and it changes everything else. So you can't do that with this presentation?
We can do that. Representative Wilson, through the chair, yes, we could do that. We wanted to maintain consistency with the published document that we had, but it can be changed.
It can be changed.
It would help me to understand at least the things that we know that are the bigger portions of this, mm-hmm. You know, how it would affect it on all these levels, so it's a little bit more, I guess, realistic for us. And as far as the priorities go, the departments will tell us it's all their priorities, and I've been told by at least one commissioner that they are unable to share a list of priorities with us, that they support the governor's budget and they don't need to prioritize it. So they can show me where it goes back to their mission statement, absolutely. But when money starts running out, you know, they can have us guess what we think is important, not necessarily knowing all the details. Or I heard that there was a statute out there, I believe, Mr. Kocher, that says that they're supposed to give it to us, but I've never seen actually a list of priorities for a department listed by what they think is important based on their mission. Thank you.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up and get some precise numbers on what the first three questioners asked, also on page 14. So do you intend, is the intention here to propose, if you look at the general fund expenses starting in FY15, is the proposal here to keep sort of flat funding for agencies out from FY15 to FY24? Is that the proposal?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, that would be, that's, again, for illustration purposes, that would be the total state budget, including agencies, formula, capital, spending, that's an entire dollar amount.
Through the chair, but so you're proposing flat funding from FY15 through FY24, is that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, for the purposes of the executive summary and the scenario that we have in front of you, that was our design to show you the impact of doing that.
Okay. Through the chair, just as some people have alluded to, the FY15 budget really isn't a $5.6 billion budget because roughly $700 million of that, if not more, would have come out of the general fund for the PERS TERS payments, and now we're up at $6.3 billion. And the governor, when he presented the budget to us, said, we expect you to put legislative projects into the capital budget. That's another $200 to $400 million, and now we're at $6.7 billion. So in order for your numbers to work and preserve a CBR of $8 billion, if we kept it at the amount the governor proposes, that's really about a $6.7 billion budget, and we'll have basically a CBR deficit of about $8 billion by FY24, unless you're planning for us to cut another $1.5 billion or $1 billion between FY15 and FY16, right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, I think that is part of the discussion that we're having. If the legislature is supportive of the governor's proposal to transfer the money out of the CBR, but at the end of the day, it will be a decision that we work on with you for what will ultimately be funded.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm going to get to the next subject, but I think it's clear to everybody on this committee that in order to get to $5.6 billion in FY16, we're going to have to cut another $1 billion out of the budget. It's not just the same as this year's budget. So, and I don't want to shoot the messenger. You're showing oil production. The state has come up with a new methodology to do what it says most accurately reflect its oil production forecasts. It started that last spring, and then it continued that to this fall. This is their best methodology, and they admit they're never 100% right. But I don't remember ever last year when we were debating the new oil tax law, anybody telling us if we passed it, we would be down to 285,000 barrels a day in FY24. So can you ask somebody at the governor's office or Department of Revenue to show us where they ever told us that last year? Because this is showing me a number that I don't think was ever discussed last year. I could be wrong. It's not for you. It's for you to ask the Department of Revenue, Resources, or the governor's office to get to us.
Mr. Chairman, we'll ask the Department of Revenue to get that for you.
Thank you. And then just one other thing, Mr. Chair. I don't think there's going to be unanimous agreement on this, but like Representative Osterman says and Governor Hickel once said, you can't continue to cut your way to prosperity. So, you know, we're down to this year's budget, and then next year the proposal apparently is for another $1 billion in cuts. And then from then out, it's a flat-funded budget, so basically you're going to have internal cuts constantly to maintain a flat budget because of inflation and salary increases. But even just the Health and Human Services Budget Subcommittee, as we've tried to look into that agency to try and find waste, we've spent close to a year. And it's not, I don't blame it on the commissioner, but nobody in the administration is saying this is wasteful, this is wasteful, this is wasteful. Then we've got another dozen or so agencies, and nobody's coming to us and saying this is wasteful, this is wasteful, this is wasteful. And I guess it's frustrating, and again, I'm shooting the messenger. It's frustrating for us to hear you got to find ways to cut a ton of stuff out of the budget, but we're not going to tell you that we found any waste. And maybe there isn't any, so let's just be flat honest. If there's no waste, just come in and say there's no waste. But if there is, somebody's got to tell us what it is. And so I'm very frustrated because it's either A, an admission from the administration, we finally reached the point where there's no waste, and if that's the honest answer, that's fine. Or it's that there is waste and nobody's telling us what it is. So we've got to hear the answers to that. It's one or the other. So we don't have to flounder on this side in trying to figure out what a proper budget is. Again, that's not you're not running an agency, but that's what we're getting from the agencies, is no answer as to where the waste is or whether we've reached the point where we found all the waste.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guerra, I don't disagree with what you're saying. I think what I can tell you is that this is exactly the discussion that we're having on an annual basis. When we put our budgets together with our departments, we have brought forward some very lean budget requests. I expect to see even leaner budget requests next year. So some of that hard work and the work that we're doing internally to focus on the priorities and to make sure that we're not duplicating and wasting effort and resource is going to continue to happen. I agree that we're not going to be able to cut our way to prosperity, but I think we all recognize we are going to have a real hard conversation about what the overall level of spending is going to be in this particular environment. We also know that these numbers are going to change. So it's I think the value, as we started the discussion, the value is really having this as a tool, continuing the discussion, because we know our budgets are going to be leaner and we're going to have to focus on priorities and eliminating waste in departments. We'll keep working on that.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm going to continue the dialogue in the direction it's taking. My concern, of course, is the general fund expenses line and the reality of what that is and the vision for the future or the lack of it. You know, when you go through the plan requirements, you know, the economic stability of the state is key. You talk in great length, and I applaud it, you know, developing our resources, saving for the future generations. But when you get to about page 7, you start talking about things that take money. You know, we're anticipating major projects on the horizon, pipelines, dams, the goal of the 50% of alternative energy. You know, those things are accountable in numbers that we already have. They're planable. You know, they might not be completely accurate, but they're on the horizon. We're spending money now to get to certain levels of those. We haven't even begun to do the real work in Arctic development. You know, if piled those things into that general fund expense line, you're in a negative all the way across. You know, so I'm just looking for the vision of the state built into a dialogue that we have, you know, hoping that it originates on the third floor out of your office and with the governor, you know, and talk about what it's going to take to build a pipeline, what the revenues are going to come back out of that, how that is going to lower the cost of affordable energy for all Alaskans, the strategic minerals, you know, how many more jobs expectation over, I mean, we're talking about 10 years. This is, you know, I can see you not understanding next year or 3 years exactly what stuff's going to turn around, but we have a picture. We have lots of documents that are thrown on our desk on a daily basis about things that are going to happen and needs that are going to happen. And you know, every Alaskan goes through the winter knowing that there's a spring. You don't have that on here. You know, there's no growth. We know when you're in a hole, you stop digging, but you have to grab the shovel and dig yourself out. And that's investing in the state. And I'm looking for it here. You know, I understand you're talking to the agencies and telling them to put downward pressure on everything. But those projects that we want to build, everybody wants them. And just looking for that vision of Alaska coming out of the office is, you know, maybe this is where we start that dialogue. And maybe, you know, we start plugging those numbers into here. But without your help and guidance, it's pretty hard.
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, the big projects that you kind of referred to are hopefully an optimistic part of Alaska's future in terms of, you know, actually putting numbers to a plan. At this point, it seems somewhat premature, because those dialogues will happen with the legislature at the appropriate time, and then the plan can reflect those as we know more about them. That may be, we try to acknowledge those things within the text of the plan itself, that there will be competing priorities, for example, two that have been talked to today is we have an increasing Medicaid budget. We would like to do hydro. We have a pipeline. To me, that points to all big things that and hard conversations that will have to occur in the, you know, the near future. So I don't think that the plan is designed to come to you with necessarily all of the answers, so to speak, because I think solving some of these issues are going to take a pretty hard dialogue between the legislature and involving the citizens as well.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, it just seems that in anticipation of the governor's work on a pipeline, the industry is going to put people in the field, as will the state have to put people in the field. You know, there's only $10 million in for CITINA this year, anticipation of more work being done next year. So theoretically, there was supposed to be, I think it was 110 if everything was up to date. There's 10 this year. There would be another 100 next year. That represents, you know, something in the next year. I mean, all these things going forward, you know, there's a scenario that we would like seeing built on all this stuff, and I guess I was wondering why it's not here. I mean, I understand agencies are full of people that dream about the future, and in some ways that's their job. You know, if we're doing this, how do we get there? You suppress that to keep this budget flat. I mean, you kind of said that and just be realistic about what we're doing and all this stuff. But, you know, I mean, I want a combination of all those things to happen. And I'm, you know, in 10 years, I'm sure I'm not going to be here in 10 years, but I want somebody to look back and say, you started this dialogue. I mean, I was at Fairbanks before the pipeline hit. But when it hit, we were not prepared. I mean, that was an amazing event, you know, and all the local governments, you know, have gotten together since then and done planning on municipal impact studies. You know, if this starts rolling, those numbers are out there. You know, and looking for that dream of the future, that dialogue of what it is, being realistic, doesn't have to be the whole nine yards because nobody knows what it is. But you've done a series of scenarios there. It could be the same thing. Thank you.
Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say I appreciate all the work that's gone into these projections. Just sitting here thinking that, you know, if I'm a fisherman putting a 10-year budget together, the ups and downs that occur season to season that you can never, ever anticipate. And when you put something like this together, of course, you try not to understate things. You try not to overstate as well. But that said, my gut feeling is I sure hope it works out this way, because my sense is from the drivers that I'm familiar with on the internal end of things in the agency budgets and some of the things that we need to get done here in Alaska to keep moving forward vis-a-vis the external things we can't control. You know, there's talk about China slowing down now and increase in shale oil production and the fact that those prices up there for oil could be on the wildly optimistic side. You start putting that all together with the uncertainty on the federal end of things and whether sequestration or automatic budget cuts or this, that, and the other. You know, as conservative as this outlook is, and I really think a lot of, and I appreciate the work that went into, I think it is conservative, and I think you've got some pretty bare bones numbers there in terms of general fund revenues as well as the amount of oil flowing down the pipeline. To sort of bring all this into the form of a question, Mr. Chairman, I guess it would be this, that if you had to say in terms of understating things that the revenue and the production side, given what if we had somebody from the industry or maybe a different part of the executive branch here, I think there would be more optimism in terms of 4 to 5 years that those revenue numbers and production numbers are actually going to be a little bit more optimistic than what you put down there, because to me the key line up there in all of them is the general fund revenues. We can't control that. On the spending side, we can control to some degree to what we can. So I'll boil it down to the general fund revenues and the general fund production. If you had to be more optimistic, where does that change 4 to 5 years down the road? And I'm not trying to revisit Senate Bill 21. This is not a gotcha, but this is you know, when I talk to folks about the revenue curve going back up, it's generally 4 to 5 to 6 years down the road. But of course, this doesn't anticipate that, because again, this is a very conservative projection going forward. But where would that sort of that demarcation line be in terms of that curve going up? And maybe we have a little more sense of optimism because this right here doesn't lay out a very optimistic scenario. It really doesn't, knowing what we know, or at least I know as a finance committee member here in the House.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edgman, agreed. I think we have a lot of reason to be optimistic, particularly when we hear about all the activity that's occurring. I'm going to ask John if you have anything specific about the window, but we know this is a very conservative view of where we are at the moment.
Representative Edgemond, through the chair, what we tried to do in a conservative fashion without being wild-eyed was to represent in a contrast between the mid-case scenario. So let's say that half of the barrels came through. So if you did comparisons between 1 year and the next, just based solely on that 50% of the risk barrels coming in, that would improve your revenue line. And over the course of time, our reserve position improves basically from $8 billion to $12 billion, all other things equal. And so you can kind of, you know, if you just look at the reserve bottom line, that enhanced production would be 50% is, given all these qualifiers, it would mean about $4 billion extra to the Treasury, which that's almost a year's worth of revenue in 10 years. So, you know, that's not insignificant. And I defer to the Department of Revenue as to how conservative that 50% is. But again, we felt it was important in the context of this plan to show some increased production, but also temper it too with, as you said, what if the prices change? Because we've seen that happen before. So.
And Mr. Chairman, just the prices could go up as well too. I mean, you've got to leave that to one's imagination.
Yeah.
Not to leave it on a negative note. I'm just as good, bad, or whatever you want to call it, projecting out the negative side of some things. But I do think that these are the conversations we need to continue to have. I don't, regardless of what form it comes under, I think that reality-based conversations about what we have and what we are anticipating spending need to be brought forward on a constant basis. I also want to basically thank OMB and the governor for bringing forward a smaller budget. You know, we started last year with flat funding. This year you're at 30.6 million below of last year. And this is the direction we have to go. We don't want to crash off the cliff and just throw the economy in a tailspin either. So I think we're going about it right. But I do think that we need to make sure that we have everything on the table when we have the conversations. I appreciate the meetings that we had this summer, talking about and looking at what the budget prospects were. And I would like to very much have your office continue those conversations so that we all come down here next year knowing exactly where we're at, what we're talking about, and what the problems are going to be. So, Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to acknowledge OMB's role as a governor in giving us probably a more responsible budget or a more realistic budget than your commissioners suggested to you. As I know, this is a smaller budget than the department's asked you for. And that's and we hear that. Sometimes it leaks out from your folks that complain that they're not getting what they asked for, and and you guys take the brunt of that. That's a tough job you have. And I don't say it's leaks out. I mean, in any organization, there's a chain of command, and we have a strong governor for a reason, and he's responsible for the budget. That's right. You guys have to play the bad guy more often. You have to do it at several stages. We only have to take that criticism at one level. It's the appropriation process, and you're throughout. So I appreciate your hard job.
Thank you.
I would add. I don't want to just leave that with the table that the view that we can't cut ourselves to prosperity. I know people I represent are fully aware we can spend ourselves into oblivion and obscurity, and that's I don't want to leave just one message out there there are very, very, very strong and fiscal concerns about unsustainability, and And I think that's the theme of this legislature and in our discussions is sustainability. And we're not sustainable right now. Something has to give. And that's where we can spend ourselves into even irrelevance at some point. We can want and wish to do a lot of things, and we've set expectations. I think that's that can be a crueler thing to do to folks, is to set expectations. I'd like to, lastly, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to follow up on Representative Guttenberg's point about Susitna Watana. And I'm going to just be very blunt and say we should stop talking about a 50% goal of renewable resources, because I don't see a commitment for that from the administration. The entity that the legislature created and the governor signed has a dependence of a commitment of all of our rail belt utilities to gas supply, and I think the public is really being not treated to good information on our commitment to renewable energy with the assumptions that are built into the gas line proposals. I think the price is far too optimistic. It's we're looking at our highest spot price and is setting the economics of it, and a reliance of commitment of all of our rail belt utilities to natural gas generation instead of hydroelectric supply from the Susitna Water Project. And we're already seeing the contracts, some of them that were on Susitna, being shifted to gas line responsibility. So it sends a pretty grim message to folks that actually believe in sustainable energy as a policy. And I almost wish we would just stop pretending that we actually have a goal of renewable resource of 50%, because every message we're getting is counter to that. And it's let's not deceive the public if that's not the goal. And I think there ought to be more candid and blunt discussion about what our real commitment is. I know the thing that there was certainly a lot of very just criticism about the management of Susitna, and I've heard a lot of that. But almost every involved is an exempt employee. Why punish the project instead of maybe changing some of the faces? We're talking a bunch of exempt employees, and I haven't heard of one disciplinary action. I haven't heard about one firing, one demotion. So if it really is about a mismanagement, we've got to get it on track. Well, let's shake up something else besides just abandoning the project. And that's a message for somebody who might be listening. I don't expect OMB to respond to that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, I think we're done.
Can I announce the next meeting? We have just a comment about the. Mr. Chairman, we have four board extensions. We have a larger overriding issue on the way that we're funding these boards, and there's some real big holes in the way that Department of Commerce is apportioning the costs. It's my intent to do the due diligence on the audit portion and the mission of the boards, but it's really difficult to pass out these board extensions without looking at the Commerce's plan and how we're going to fund these and how this affects some of the boards that are more fiscally sound, and I don't want to put them in peril for boards that aren't performing or not or the economics aren't as sound as some of them. So it's I think it's very appropriate to get these bills heard and get that part of it out, but it's really tough for us as a finance committee to just pass these out to the floor without looking at the larger fiscal issue. And Representative Costello was tonight. He's the chair.
Oh, may I comment on that?
No. Yes.
It is true that the Department of Commerce has been pulling their hair out over how to address some of the erratic costs that the boards are seeing, and so we are having a presentation yet again this year on their the status of that. And we also have a bill that's in the process. Representative Olson has introduced legislation that will help address that, and so it's my hope that we'll also see that bill come through this committee, because I think it will help address some of the long-standing problems that we've seen
in the licensures and the fees that the Alaskans pay. So thank you for that.
Mr. Chairman, just for the folks that are interested in these boards, I have not heard any contention or issues with the continuation of them. But again, it's solving the larger fiscal issue and concern before we pass it on. So.
Okay. With that, then we will adjourn until 1:30 tomorrow afternoon, when we will take up those bills.
Yeah.